Revelation is an apocalypse. What is an apocalypse? By Bart D. Ehrman. Read by John Paul Middlesworth. To most modern readers, the apocalypse of John seems mystical and bizarre, quite unlike anything else that they have read or, well, want to read. In part, this explains some other people's fascination with the book. It is so strange, so unearthly, that its descriptions cannot simply have been dreamt up. Its supernatural feel seems to vindicate its supernatural character. The historian who approaches the book, however, sees it in a somewhat different light, for this was not the only book of its kind to be written in the ancient world, even if it is the only one that most of us have ever read. As with all genres, novels, epic poems, short stories, limericks, apocalypses shared a number of literary conventions that made them different from other kinds of writing. If you understand these conventions, you will be much better equipped to understand this particular book in light of them. In this post, I'll explain what those connections were, and in the next, I'll show how they help shape the book of Revelation. This is taken from my textbook, The New Testament, Oxford University Press, edited a bit for this occasion. Apocalyptic Worldviews and the Apocalypse Genre. On the blog, I have often used the term apocalypticism to refer to an ancient Jewish and Christian worldview that maintained that there were two fundamental components of reality, good and evil, and that everything in the world was aligned on one side or the other, God versus the devil, the angels versus the demons, life versus death, etc. This dualistic perspective is applied to human history. The present age was seen to be evil, controlled by the devil and his forces, whereas the age to come would be good, controlled by God. According to this view, there was to be a cataclysmic break between the ages when God would destroy the forces of evil to bring in his kingdom. At that time, there would be a judgment of all beings, both living and dead. This judgment was imminent. Whereas the term apocalypticism refers to this worldview, apocalypse refers to a genre of literature that embodies it. Everyone who wrote a Jewish or Christian apocalypse was obviously an apocalypticist. That is, he or she embraced the apocalyptic worldview. The reverse, however, is not true. Not every apocalypticist wrote an apocalypse. Thus, neither John the Baptist, nor Jesus, nor Paul, to take three prominent examples, appears to have written a detailed vision of the heavenly realities. The first Jewish apocalypticist to do so, to our knowledge, was the author of Daniel, around 165 BCE. The second half of which contains several brief apocalypses. Other apocalypses written somewhat later include the non-canonical Jewish works of 1st Enoch, 2nd Baruch, and 4th Ezra, and two important Christian apocalypses that we will be exploring later in this chapter, the Shepherd of Hermas and the Apocalypse of Peter. These apocalypses differ in important ways, but nearly all of them appear to have been written in times of distress and suffering in order to oppose the current order of things and the powers that maintained it. These books invariably show that despite the suffering experienced by the people of God, God is ultimately in control and will soon intervene on their behalf. One of the important purposes of these works, then, is to encourage those who are experiencing the forces of evil to hold on and keep the faith. Their suffering is not in vain and will not last long, for soon they will be vindicated in the glorious climax of history in which God will destroy the forces of evil and exalt those who have remained faithful to Him. Apocalypse as a genre, general description. The Jewish and Christian apocalypses that convey this message share a number of literary features. For starters, all of them are first-person narratives by prophets who have been granted highly symbolic visions or dreams. The visions are usually interpreted by a heavenly being who serves as a mediator. For the most part, the visions serve to explain the realities of earth from the perspective of heaven. Realities such as the ultimate meaning of life and the future course of earth's history. These narratives always embody a triumphal movement from the painful existence of life here below to the glorious life up above, or from the hardships and sufferings of the present to the vindication and bliss of the future. There are two major kinds of ancient apocalypses. These are not mutually exclusive categories. As you will see, the Book of Revelation has aspects of each, although some other apocalypses are only of one type or the other. Number one, heavenly journeys. In this kind of apocalypse, the prophet is taken up into heaven and given a tour of the heavenly realm by an angelic companion. There, he beholds symbols and events that have earthly implications. The idea implicit in this kind of apocalypse is that life on earth directly reflects life in heaven. That is, it is somewhat like the earthly shadow of a heavenly reality. Compare our discussion of the Platonic notion of shadow versus reality in chapter 25. Number two, historical sketches. In this kind of apocalypse, the prophet has a symbolic vision of the future course of history. For example, grotesque beasts might arise out of the sea to wreak havoc on the earth, representing various kingdoms that will come to dominate the people of God. See Daniel 7. The symbolism is often explained to the seer by the heavenly mediator, and through him to the reader. Apocalypse as a genre, specific literary features. Despite their wide-ranging differences, the surviving apocalypses typically share specific literary features. The most common of these are the following. Pseudonymity. Almost all of the ancient apocalypses were written pseudonymously in the name of a famous religious person from the past. The Book of Revelation is a rare exception. Among the surviving Jewish apocalypses are some claiming to be written by Moses, Abraham, Enoch, and even Adam. We have Christian apocalypses reputedly from the pens of the prophet Isaiah and the apostles Peter, Paul, and Thomas. Is there a particular reason for authors of apocalypses to hide their identity behind a pseudonym? We have already seen that pseudonymity can help secure a hearing for one's views by lending a kind of authority to one's writing that it otherwise could not hope to enjoy. Nowhere is this kind of authority more important than when one is writing a detailed description of heavenly realities that explain the tragedies and suffering of earthly life. Such visions of transcendent truth are obviously not granted to just anybody. It makes sense, then, that authors of apocalypses typically claim to be famous persons of the past who were renowned for their religious piety and devotion to God. Only to such as these would God reveal the ultimate truths that could unlock the mysteries of human existence. The use of a pseudonym made particular sense for apocalypses of the historical sketch type. By pretending to be someone living in the distant past, an author could predict the future. A typical ploy, then, was to write in the name of a prophet from ancient times to whom were revealed a number of events that were to take place. By the author's time, of course, they already had happened. When the author then continued to predict what was soon to happen in his own day, the reader didn't know when this was, of course, since the author claimed to be writing from the distant past, he was naturally granted the benefit of the doubt. That is to say, these future events, from the time of the reader, were just as certain to occur as those that had already happened. The prophet had been right about everything else. Surely he was also right about what would come next. The first apocalypse known to use this technique came to be included in the Hebrew Bible. The Book of Daniel, allegedly written by the great wise man of the 6th century BCE during the days of the Babylonian captivity, was actually written, in the judgment of almost all critical scholars, sometime during the period of suffering associated with the Maccabean Revolt, some 400 years later. No wonder, quote-unquote, Daniel could predict the rise of the Persians and the Greeks, and even more accurately detail events that were to transpire near the time of the Jewish uprising. The author of these prophecies lived after they had taken place. We should probably not pass moral judgment on this kind of literary device, for it is not at all clear that the apocalyptic authors meant to lead people astray by writing under a pseudonym. Rather, they intended to provide comfort and hope for those who were in the throes of terrible suffering. Bizarre symbolic visions. Rarely do apocalypses describe the geography of heaven or the events of the future in straightforward and easily understood terms. Instead, they delight in the mystical and revel in the symbolic. The future is envisioned as a series of wild and grotesque beasts that appear on the face of the earth. There are fantastic spectacles, bizarre images, strange figures, and mysterious events. The symbols often confuse not only the reader, but also the prophet himself, who sometimes presses the angelic mediator for an interpretation of what he has seen. Sometimes the explanation itself is mysterious and subject to a wide range of interpretations. violent repetitions. Apocalypses often convey the mysteries of the heavenly realm through violent repetitions. By this, I do not mean that there is always repeated violence in these texts, although there often is, but that the repetitions themselves are violent in that they violate the literal sense of the narrative. That is, apocalypticists often emphasize their points by producing countless repetitions for effect. If one were to take Revelation's descriptions of future disasters literally, for example, there would be no way to map them out chronologically on a timeline. As we have already seen, at the breaking of the sixth seal, the sun, moon, and stars are destroyed. Surely this is the end. No life could possibly go on existing. But life does go on, and we enter into a new phase of sufferings on the earth, with the heavenly lights shining in full force. What we have then is a kind of spiral effect in narrative. The catastrophes that the writing describes cannot be sketched in linear fashion, as if one event necessarily occurred after another. One benefit of this kind of repetition is that it allows the author to employ important numbers known to have mystical qualities. In the book of Revelation, for example, there are three major sets of seven disasters sent from heaven. The number three probably symbolizing fullness and perfection, and seven symbolizing divinity, as opposed to six, which is one short of seven and therefore imperfect. See later on the number of the beast, 666. Triumphalist movement. By their nature, apocalypses are designed to provide hope for those who suffer and despair. In the end, God will prevail. The present suffering is intense, and that to come will be yet more intense. But ultimately, God will triumph over evil and vindicate his people. Motivational function. These books exhort their readers to remain faithful to their religious commitments, to keep true to their faith, and to refuse to give up hope. This point is worth emphasizing. Ancient Jewish and Christian apocalypses were written not so much to reveal the precise details of the future as to provide motivation for those who were in danger of growing slack in their commitments and of losing hope in the midst of their suffering. The hope they provided was rooted in the belief that when all was said and done, God was in control of the world and would eventually reward those who remained faithful to him. In the next post, we will see how Revelation can be understood in light of these conventions.